precious grain would be wasted. Rush Lake became to us a place of having a lot of nothing. No electricity, indoor plumbing, or modern conveniences like a car, but that was true for many people of that day. But we didn't even have the bare essentials. So we learned to improvise. We had no bath towels, no toothpaste, no shoe polish, no trees, not one tree, no dentist, no hairbrush for my tangled curly hair, no books except the German Bible book, Bible, and the black and white Bible storybook with pictures, no curtains, no Mennonite church, and on. I was going to say, and no mother's teeth. She lost all her teeth and could not afford dentures. Dad even threatened to have us recycle our own school books so we could use them. We would have to erase the penciled writing and arithmetic. This is once I pleaded for mercy. Dad, if we have to work with erased paper, I would no longer enjoy school. And we never did. But he and mother were desperate. I loved school. We had a marvelous teacher by the name of Miss Erskine. This was really not a Mennonite community, but there were a few Mennonites around. Christmas was another story. I got a combined molded tin car motorcycle when I was 8. Dad had done the shopping. My sister Annie got stockings. There was only enough fabric for 2 sisters' dresses instead of 3 at Christmas time. One had to wait until spring when another order went to the catalog. The summer of 1937 was more brutal than all the other years. We had come there 8 years ago. There was no crop at all. Dust storms, grasshoppers, army worms had taken every stalk. Green tumbleweeds, which we called Russian thistle, were abundant, so Dad and Henry harvested them and stacked them in the yard. They turned from green to black stacks. The stacks were black because the infestation of worms, army worms we called them, had made them poisonous to animals. Relief came from the government at last. It offered a free railroad card and transportation to anyone who wanted to move out of the Dust Bowl. My dad could never say enough good things about the Canadian government for this and for their stability, dependability, and lack of corruption in comparison to the Russia that he had left behind. The book tells about the move. On September the 9th, 1937, we arrived at Winnipegosis, Manitoba. Oh, it was only a day's drive in the car, in the pickup truck in which my brother, oldest brother George, took us. My dad and my brother had a railroad car. It was about 200 to 250 miles north of North Dakota. It was a new chapter in our lives. Our parents started over when they were 49 and 52 years old. But now they had some livestock, implements, and meager household items, and their children were old enough to help the household with chores and farming. That first winter was the hardest winter we had ever seen. We had not expected anything worse than 1937, but now we faced 1938. We lived in a log and mud plastered house with an earthen floor, but we could keep it warm here. Manitoba had trees, and we burnt wood all we wanted. But we still had no money. Time does not allow me today to go into detail about how we survived, but the 3 of us younger suffered skin infections. We were malnourished. The animals suffered more than we did. It was very cold in winter, and they didn't get enough good food, good fodder to keep them healthy. We came there after harvest time, and so the hay wasn't any good. One horse fell while trying to pull a sleigh across a gravel road. That horse did survive, but another one got ill and had sleeping sickness and was never the same. Henry, Justine, and I went to a country school. He was 12, and I was almost 10, and my sister was 7. We had 3.5 miles of mostly cross-country farm roads to get to school. We attended only 3 days a week because the horse was 2 week to go five times, and Henry says it was exactly 3 days too many. Because the teacher. It was full of immigrant children, both Ukrainian and German Mennonite, like us. We students were, without exception, all very poor. One boy had no shoes, so he wore rubbers that were meant to be worn over shoes. They were also too big, so he wore rubber jar rings over the instep to keep them on his feet. I'm sure he wasn't warm. We were taught by a Russian Mennonite named Mr. Dick. I cannot tell you today how mean that teacher was. It's in the book. I lost all love of learning. I didn't care if I passed or failed. I wanted to drop out of school, and I was okay. I could read and write and do arithmetic. At that point of utter hopelessness, how does one ever get past the poverty, the lack of education, the degradation, and become a useful citizen of the world? Even the Canadian Pacific Railroad tracks ended there. I would gladly have been a fourth grade dropout. It seemed to be the end of the world as we had known it. One significant positive for this 9-year-old, almost 10, we had a German Mennonite church. Every Sunday we went to church. We made friends. About 40 families attended here. Everyone had migrated from Ukraine to Russia, to Canada during the 1920s. Some even came from Grigoryevka. There were 5 families from Grigoryevka, where my parents had lived. This was still pioneering country. New land was being broken. Here there was hope. We had Sunday school and sermons by uneducated ministers. The next year, we would go to a different school. For my 3 older sisters, this was an oasis in more ways than one. Girls their age were scarce, but there were a lot of young men whom they learned to know at innocent evening parties. Spring came at last, and Dad bought a farm with borrowed money again. There were no buildings on the property, and so the building began. Henry, age 13, dropped out of school, and Dad got free lodgepole pines from many miles away to build a house and a barn, and that on snow and sleighs. Annie and Lena mixed the clay and water and plastered the exterior of both buildings and the interior of the house. They plastered every inch of both buildings with their 2 hands. In summer, my oldest sister, Nettie, got married. George, my oldest sibling, was by now on his own and worked in Regina. Before the end of the school term in 1938, we moved to our new mud log house. We also said goodbye and good riddance to our teacher, Mr. Dick. Dick was a Mennonite, so-called. Our horses and cows had green pastures, and chickens grazed in the green grass yard. We had milk and eggs and sold cream every week. It was income. The garden was big and growing. The grain grew on good black soil. Rocks were almost non-existent. When World War II raged in Europe, the price of grain rose at home. It was by no means instant wealth, but we prospered and we hoped. The new school with 56 children was taught by a dear man, Mr. Turner, who did his best to teach that many children in a one-room school. I had lost all zeal for learning anything. Later, a few of us went to Bible school, the 5-month Bible school, so we could teach Sunday school. But why go to high school? Everyone got married and lived on a farm. That would be my future, too. I will jump from age 10 to age 20 in my story now. My former boyfriend, now I had a new girlfriend, and Dad was getting too old to farm. All of my brothers and sisters were now married. Dad sold the farm to my brother-in-law, Nettie's husband, John Redicup, for $8,000. Justine had left earlier to work in British Columbia for my oldest brother, George, who owned the Sunrise Bakery in Cranberry and was doing very well. In the spring of 1948, we had the only auction sale of our lives. All of the animals, we had 4 horses, and implements, and the little furniture we had were sold. My parents and I took the train to Abbotsford, British Columbia, which in my opinion is paradise compared to Manitoba. The climate compares to Oregon, and the berries grow like they do in Oregon. I could earn money and get an education. My parents bought a 2-acre plot in Clearbrook, British Columbia, which is a pretty Mennonite town in British Columbia, a half mile away from the West Abbotsford Mennonite Church. It was a general conference church, which we were. A mile and a half in the opposite direction was the Mennonite High School. A conversation I'd had when I was 17 or 18 and still living in Manitoba with a young woman of 20 who had come from southern Manitoba to help with summer Bible school had stuck in my memory. Mary had a high school education. I envied her, and I told her it was too late for me. Her comment was, "No, it is not too late for you." And with the Mennonite school so close to my home, I realized I had an opportunity, and I was not about to miss it. Now I was truly motivated. I could forget Mr. Dick. We had no horses now. Incidentally, he ended in a camp for traders. We had no horses now and no transportation. I walked to school. I looked young for my age, and no one would notice that I was 20 and in grade 9. 3 years later, I finished grade 12, and I'm calling them grade 12 because that's what we call them in Canada. During my time in BC, I did housework in Vancouver, picked hundreds of pounds of strawberries and raspberries, left the Fraser Valley in the late summer to work in a tomato cannery. I entered nursing school in New Westminster at the Royal Columbian Hospital in January of 1952. A full college degree in nursing was not even dreamed about back then. My goal was to become a registered nurse so I could serve mankind and earn a living. Time does not allow me to tell of this life-changing experience, but I graduated 3 years later holding a dozen roses to my white bibbed uniform. I continued working at the same hospital to earn money to go to the Canadian Mennonite Bible School in Winnipeg that autumn of 1955. The two years there proved valuable. Now I was ready to change the world. While I was in school for these many years of adulthood, my friends and cousins got married and were raising families. I had gained an education at the cost of being a wife and mother. At that time, there were few Mennonite men I knew who had the opportunity to get an education. For most Russian Mennonites, survival of the family was more important than school. After World War II, many refugees from Russia had emigrated to Canada. One family lived in our outbuilding on our yard until they could get on their feet. So on our yard and at the church, I met charming young men who were looking for wives. Yes, I was an immigrant daughter who had walked the immigrant road all these years, but I was determined to leave that road behind me and had struggled to work myself out of that quagmire. I could not face starting all over by marrying one of them. To hear about the atrocities of yet another war in Russia. In the fall of 1957, I volunteered with Mennonite Central Committee to go to Jordan. On my way to Jordan, I was at orientation at Akron when I met a fine, young, educated American whom I married 2 years later. This is pretty much where my book ends. I deliberately did not go on in the life story because you are familiar with American life. In conclusion, I want to come back to the subtitle of my book, A Monument to Poverty. No, I'm not the monument to poverty. I'm the immigrant daughter. The monument to poverty is the house on the front cover of the book. That's my childhood home in Saskatchewan. On page 223 of the book are three photos showing three stages of time periods of the house as it deteriorated. The last one is on the back, on the bottom of the back cover also. The house on its knees. Farewell to poverty. Not just for me, but for my siblings too. One of them worked hard, overcame deprivation, succeeded in business, farming, and real estate, raised their families, and were generous, giving of their time, talent, and resources. In truth, Ray and I are the poorest, and we have absolutely nothing to complain about, and we recognize that there are worse things than growing up poor. We would have preferred more opportunities and an education, but the school of hard knocks probably taught us more than we realize. Then last week in our Heritage, our historical society newsletter, Melanie Springer, Mock, takes the subtitle to a different direction. Instead of a monument to poverty, she amends it to a testament to poverty. I like that. Why didn't I think of that? My story is a validation and a testimony to my family's economic conditions. I hope it bears witness to virtues. Like patience, humility, diligence. Fortitude, empathy, courage, compassion, and strength. An immigrant daughter and a testament to poverty.